Hi from Club Rabble. In addition to being a collection of great writers with our pulse on what's happening in Canada's progressive communities, we throw quite a party. This music is from one of our fundraising events last June in Ottawa, where our loyal supporters had the opportunity to come out and show their support for Rabble. Rabble.ca doesn't have any corporate owner or sponsor. We have no major foundation support. We get zero government dollars. What we are proud of is to have community support and donors like you. To show your support for Rabble.ca, why not become a monthly donor? Go to rabble.ca/donate to sign up. Join us all at Club Rabble. We're a bunch of cool cats. Keep the music, and especially the words, flowing. rabble.ca/donate.
This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
Welcome to the Rabble Book Lounge Podcast. Books worth listening to. I'm Roshni Nair. Recently, I spoke with author Shelley Wright. Her new book, Our Ice is Vanishing, Sikuvut Nungaluktuk, is a history of the Arctic. It's inspired by Shelley's work with the Akitisarak Law School in Iqaluit, Nunavut. I spoke with her in Vancouver in between her travels. We're in a dining room very close to the airport, so you might hear a few planes overhead. Here's Shelley Wright.
My name is Shelley Wright, and I've written a book called Our Ice is Vanishing, Sikuvut Nungaluktuk. I teach Aboriginal studies at Langara College here in Vancouver, where I've been for a number of years now. Before that, I was the Northern Director of the Akitsala Law School, which was based in Iqaluit, Nunavut, for Inuit students. I was there for, I guess, almost 3 years altogether. And before that, I was in Australia, New Zealand, Singapore, traveling around the world teaching law. So my background is as a lawyer and law professor, but now I'm focusing more just on Aboriginal studies.
Why did you decide to write this book at this time?
I started the book about 6 or 7, 8 years ago now, and it was mostly to try and open a door for people to learn more about the Arctic. And I wanted to do it in a way that wasn't just polar bears or Sir John Franklin and dead white guys. It wasn't just about southern scientific researchers coming up and looking at marine or other wildlife. It wasn't just about Canadian sovereignty or Coast Guard vessels and all that kind of stuff. So I wanted to do something that focused more on the people who actually live in the Arctic. I don't think that they've been given a fair hearing in a lot of the books and articles and other material written about the Arctic. And I felt that people in the South didn't really understand that the Arctic is not just an empty wilderness, that it has people who have been living there for hundreds of years. In fact, people have been living in the Arctic for at least 5,000 to 7,000 years that we know of. So I wanted to write a book that related my own experience, that did talk about some of these issues like sovereignty and so on, but focused a lot more on Inuit perspectives.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know, to me, the heart of the book is just this idea that climate change is a human rights issue. So do you want to elaborate what you meant by that?
I think that's really, really important, and I'm glad that you got that from the book, because that was one of the things I really wanted to emphasize, is that climate change is not just about polar bears. It's not just about, you know, freaky weather down here, down south, and melting ice. It's also about a way of life for the people who have been living in the Arctic and how quickly they're going to have to adjust to this new reality as a result of the melting ice. So I felt that I needed to write about this in my book. And my background is as a human rights lawyer, Indigenous rights lawyer. So it's not just about the law of the sea. It's about the people who live there.
And what do you mean by the law of the sea? I think that was an interesting part of your book. Just what is the Arctic?
Well, the Arctic Basin is largely ocean in the sense of being made of water, but the water, of course, is frozen for still half the year. The Law of the Sea is an international convention to which almost every nation in the world is a member, and it governs the international law in relation to oceans. In particular, nations' rights in relation to oceans that are near their territories as well as the high seas. And so a lot of the discussion in relation to the Arctic has been funneled through this international regime on who owns the continental shelf, you know, what about economic activities in the Arctic, what about fishing, what about oil and gas. A lot of it has been focused on the rights of nation states to claim parts of the Arctic Ocean as belonging to their nation states. And that's still being debated. From an Inuit perspective, this doesn't really make a lot of sense because, as far as I could gather from an Inuit perspective, there's no real distinction between land and sea. Their law is the same, more or less, in relation to both. Because, of course, much of the year the sea is frozen and it becomes an extension of land. And Inuit used to live out on the ice for the winter. They used to travel on it. They still do. They would hunt on it. They still do. So for them to treat the Arctic as somehow ocean that can be navigated is really crazy. Although it's becoming less crazy as climate change melts the ice and it does become more navigable. So a lot of the discussion is focusing on nation state sovereignty rights and economic rights in relation to an ocean area, whereas for Inuit it's more about their own human rights, their own sovereignty, and their own position within this debate.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, like how do you balance those different legal perspectives in one Canada?
It's actually very difficult. It's very complicated. And I tried to explain it as best as I could in the book, because we've got international law. We've also got national law. And we've got territorial laws now with Nunavut. And of course, the laws in place in Greenland and other places around the Arctic. But I guess my perspective comes down to international human rights are as important, as compelling a legal basis for making claims or talking about what's going on as the law of the sea or any other international law in relation to sovereignty. In a national perspective, within Canada, Inuit rights are protected under the Constitution. Under Section 35 of the Constitution. So they have a right built into the Constitution to have a say about what goes on in the Arctic. And of course, now Nunavut is its own separate territory. It also has its own laws. So it's a really difficult balancing act between these different legal jurisdictions. And so far, Inuit seem to be getting their voices heard, but often with difficulty, because of course national governments and large corporations interested in resource development, they only want to talk about the law of the sea. They only want to talk about things to do with resource extraction and navigation, and they're not they don't seem to be particularly interested in human rights. So I was hoping my book would kind of add that other perspective to the mix, not as speaking on behalf of Inuit, but more speaking on behalf of myself, my own perspective, and trying to include Inuit voices in my book, with their permission, of course, talking about these issues.
Have you shared the book with some of your northern friends or
colleagues?
Yes, I have actually. As I was writing the book, I got a number of Inuit to read parts of it, or all of it, and got some really helpful feedback. In fact, the title is a suggestion of an Inuit elder, Peter Inlik, who's a very, very well-known, prominent Inuit elder. So, yes, I have had help and feedback from people in writing the book. I haven't had a lot of input since the book has been published. And it was actually ethically difficult. It was actually uncomfortable in a lot of ways to be including so much Inuit material in a book. I am not Inuit, and Inuit are so sick and tired of Southerners going up to the Arctic, staying there for 5 minutes, and coming away and being an expert. And I know there were one or two Inuit friends of mine who were sort of thinking, oh, don't write this book, don't be one of those people. So I was very conscious that I had an ethical obligation to ensure that as much as possible I was getting permission from people, that I was getting it looked at by Inuit, that I was trying to be as accurate as I could be, and to also make sure that I wasn't claiming an expertise that I don't have in the Arctic. So all of that raised ethical issues, and it was one of the reasons why the book took so long to write.
Yeah. So, but you still felt as though the book was important to write.
Yes, I still felt that I needed to do this book after. I actually had this conversation with an Inuit friend of mine, and, you know, basically saying I wasn't even sure I should be writing this book. And so I asked another friend to read it, and her situation in life at that time was such that she didn't think she could read it. So I did have this discussion with people, but I felt in the end I was trying to get across stories that were partly mine, partly Inuit, partly non-Inuit, about the Arctic that I think it was important that people should know. And so it really did become a kind of labor of love in a way, because the Arctic is incredible. I mean, if you know, people who haven't been there don't know, it's just the most amazing place, and it just captures your heart. It really does. It changed my life. And so partly the book was written from that very personal perspective, which is very unusual for an academic style book. Mm-hmm. So this isn't really an academic book, although parts of it are. So yeah, it's very complicated trying to sort out all of those issues.
I guess the other kind of part of the book that I really liked was kind of talking about the idea of the North for Southerners and how we, like, most of us don't go there, and then we exoticize it. And like it is kind of like this fantasy land almost.
Yes. Most Southerners like me, which means the vast majority of Canadians or everyone else sort of south of the Arctic, has no idea what the Arctic is like. We've never been there. We're never going to go there. You know, we think of ice. We think of polar bears, and that's probably about it for most Canadians. But it's much, much more than that. And I was like this when I went up there. I had no clue what I was getting myself into. It really struck me how complex it is as an ecosystem, as a land and marine area, as a human society, as a place where people have lived for thousands of years. You can go to places in the Arctic and see the remains of people who lived there before the Inuit. And you can see the remains of Inuit travels across the Arctic all over the place. There's a lot of history up there. And most Canadians, they don't even know the modern history Which, you know, most Canadians don't know a lot about anything to do with Indigenous issues, quite frankly. So I wanted the book to talk about that, but I also wanted it to talk about Inuit history and some of their oral traditions and their stories about where they come from and who they are. And again, this, you know, I'm not Inuit, I don't speak Inuktitut. So I needed help to do that part of the book, and I had to get people's permission and help and assistance. But I really wanted to get that across in the book in a way that would be accessible to Southern readers. So I hope that's it succeeded. I hope it has succeeded in doing that.
Yeah. I think what was interesting, too, is just how important the Arctic is to, like, even the way we live here in Southern Canada. Like, you said that one third of the GDP of Canada comes from the north. I was actually really surprised by that.
Yeah, that's actually, that's John Ralston Saul's figure. He has experience in the north. But if you think about it, Canada depends on resource extraction. We've always depended on resource extraction as a nation. And the vast majority of that extraction occurs in the north, not necessarily in the Arctic, but in northern British Columbia, the north of the other provinces, as well as in the territories. At the moment, relatively little of it is actually coming from Nunavut, but that is changing. We as Canadians, we live, most of us, a pretty good life because of the extraction of natural resources, a lot of which, the majority of which actually, is on Indigenous land. And it's why this whole debate in Canada right now about Aboriginal rights is so important. It's not just about Aboriginal rights, it's not just a political issue, it's a gigantic economic issue. And it is also for Inuit increasingly becoming a huge issue. So I think it really is important that those of us living in the South and benefiting from this economy that we live in, we need to learn more about where our wealth is coming from, and we need to learn more about the people on whose land this is happening.
Do you have anything else to add?
No, well, just thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to talk yet again about the book. And I just hope readers, if they get a chance to go to the Arctic, they should go. And if not, they should buy my book.
Thank you very much.
Okay. You're welcome.
That was my interview with author Shelley Wright. Her new book is called Our Ice is Vanishing, Sikivut Nungaluktuk, A History of Inuit Newcomers and Climate Change. You've been listening to the Rabble Book Lounge podcast, featuring books worth listening to. I'm Roshni Nair. Thanks for tuning in.